वंशकपुत्रुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यश्च पतितनं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. Yesterday we heard how the Lord manifests His potencies through exalted expansions such as Aniruddha Pradyumna Sankarshan and Vasudeva. Vasudeva is the super soul. Aniruddha is the predominating deity of the mind. Lord Sankarshan is in charge of the integration and disintegration of the universe. All these, integration meaning how it all holds together. Disintegration means when it's time for the annihilation. And we see this. There is integration continuously going on in this world. Things are combining, maintaining. And then we see there is disintegration in this world. So what is the potency that forces these upon the material world? What is that potency? That is coming from Krishna. It is unstoppable because it is Krishna's potency. Devi Shagunamayi Mama Maya Dharatya. Krishna is also the universal form, the air, the ether that is outside of everything and within everything. And in this way, Lord Shiva offered prayers to this potent Lord. Now when we hear about the greatness of God, when we think of someone who is basically all-pervading, who is all-powerful, who is unstoppable, who has the energies that create the world, He is the master of the energies that create the world, that destroy the world, that He was the force behind the sun, which is providing all the energy. How are we going to understand that Lord? What does He look like? So now, Lord Shiva, His prayers continue from the description of the Lord's power to the description of what this person looks like, and His form is completely inconceivable by our own power. In other words, by our own powers, we can never understand what this Lord looks like. But now Lord Shiva is going to describe Him. And in these verses yesterday, there were very nice purports by Srila Prabhupada, but we didn't read any. We just read a few, very small number of segments. And in this, but today we will read quite a few purports, if Krishna allows. So he's going to describe Lord Shiva in his prayers that he's teaching the Prachetas. He's going to describe what is the form of that person, that personality of Godhead who's been praying to a great and glorifying and describing the great powers. So Lord Shiva says in text 44, Darshanam no dudikshunam dehi bhagavadar chitam rupam priyat tamam svanam savendriya gunanjanam. My dear Lord, I wish to see you exactly in the form that your very dear devotees worship. You have many other forms, but I wish to see your form that is especially liked by the devotees. Please be merciful upon me and show me that form. Because Krishna has so many forms in this world, He comes in the form of death to everyone. That unstoppable death is also a form of Krishna. The ocean and its vastness is a form of Krishna. The makara, the banyan tree. So many different forms that Krishna has, or ways that Krishna manifests. But what is the form or the aspect that is most dear to the devotees, Lord Shiva wants to see that. Please be merciful upon me, he says, and show me that form. For only that form, worshipped by the devotees, can perfectly satisfy all the demands of the senses. Because Krishna's form it has the most incredible fragrance. Krishna's lotus feet are very, very fragrant. And his skin, to touch it, it is cooling, and everyone in this world is burning in the heat of material miseries, and the touch of his skin is cooling. And to see his beautiful form with the eyes is the perfection of those eyes. And to hear the sound of Krishna's sweet voice and the sound of his sweet flute perfectly satisfies the sense of hearing. Or Krishna's words when he speaks the Bhagavad Gita, even Shankaracharya has compared the Bhagavad Gita to a river of nectar flowing from the mouth of Lord Krishna. So in this way, when the senses, which are insatiable, when they become in touch with Krishna, when they are fully focused upon Krishna, the insatiable senses become fully satisfied. So please, he says, show me that form, because only in that way, in that form, by focusing the form on the senses on the form worshipped by the devotees, one can have all one's senses satisfied. Here's Prabhupada's purport. We'll read from the beginning. I'll skip around a little bit. In the Shruti, or the Vedic mantras, it is said that the Supreme Absolute Truth is Sarva Karma, Sarva Gandha, Sarva Rasa. Or in other words, he is known as Raso Vaisaha, the source of all relishable relationships, rasas. We have various senses, the power of seeing, tasting, smelling, touching. And all the propensities of our senses can be satisfied when the senses are engaged in the service of the Lord. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. Bhakti means engaging all the senses in the service of the master of the senses. That is what. Tatparatvena Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. So when the Rishika means the master in Isha, or rather Rishika means the senses, and Isha means the master. So one name of Krishna is Rishikesh. He is the master, the controller of all our senses, and he upon whom our senses should be focused. These material senses, however, cannot be engaged in the service of the Lord. Therefore, one has to become free from all designations. Sarva upadhi vinirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam. One has to become free from all designations or false egotism and thus become purified. When we engage our senses in the service of the Lord, the desires or the inclinations of the senses can be perfectly fulfilled. So what are the desires? The senses, maybe we can put this down a little bit. The karmis, those who are working very, very hard to gain something for their senses, what is their relationship with Krishna? They want Krishna to supply whatever they want, whatever their desire is. He's like, it's like a great Santa Claus in the sky that everyone submits their list to. Oh God, please do this and please do that. And the jnanis, those who meditate through the power of their intelligence, they want to become one, non-different from the Lord. So they all have desires. And the yogis, they want to meditate on the Paramatma, on the Lord in the heart. But what do the devotees want? Because by focusing upon the Lord, the devotees have their desires fulfilled. What do the devotees want? The bhaktas, Prabhupada continues, or the devotees, they want to see Krishna, Him, in His complete perfection. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Venam kvanvantam aravinda dalaya taksham baharvatam samasitam buddhasundarandam kandarpakoti kamaniya vishesha sobham govindam aripurusham tamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is adept at playing on His flute, whose eyes are blooming like lotus petals, because Lord Shiva is praying, I want to see that Lord, that form that is pleasing to the devotees. And Prabhupada is now describing that, and now Lord Shiva himself is going to describe it after that. Whose beauty is tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and whose unique loveliness charms millions of cupids. Thus Lord Shiva's desire is to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead as He is described in this way. That is, he wants to see Him as He appears to the Bhagavatas, the devotees. The conclusion is that Lord Shiva wants to see Him in complete perfection and not in the impersonalist or voidist way. Although the Lord is one in His various forms, adoitamatutamanadiyam, so all of, He has so many forms, there are so many aspects of the Lord, and each one is Him, none different from Him, but yet there is an original, all-inclusive, all-perfect, original form, Swayam Bhagavan. And that is the one that Lord Shiva wishes to see. And although he is one, Adoitam Achutam Anadim, still his form as the young enjoyer of the gopis and companion of the coward boys, Kishoramurti, is the most perfect form. Thus Vaishnavas accept the form of the Lord in his Vrindavan pastimes as the chief form. Text 45 and 46. So here is the description of this wonderful form. Just as we're hearing this, try to see it. See this form with your ears. We can almost see with our ears in this way. Here is it. His description. The Lord's beauty resembles a dark cloud during the rainy season. As the rainfall glistens, His bodily feature also glistens. Effulgent. Krishna's form is effulgent. Indeed, He is the sum total of all beauty. Just whatever we consider beautiful in this world, if we added all the beauty together that exists, that would be like Krishna's beauty, the sum total of all beauty. So how beautiful is Krishna? The Lord has four arms and an exquisitely beautiful face with eyes like lotus petals, a beautiful highly raised nose, a mind-attracting smile, a beautiful forehead, and equally beautiful and fully decorated ears. Here's Prabhupada's purport. After the scorching heat of the summer season, it is very pleasing to see the dark clouds in the sky. It's confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Baharvatam Samasitam Buddha Sundarangam. The Lord wears a peacock feather in His hair, and His bodily complexion is just like a blackish cloud. The word sundara or snigda means very pleasing. Kandarpakoti kamaniya. Krishna's beauty is so pleasing that not even millions upon millions of cupids can compare to it. So a cupid is the one that causes our attraction in this world. That's our common understanding of cupid. And cupid himself is so attractive. So if one took millions and millions of cupids and put them together, one would get an idea of how attractively beautiful is Krishna. The Lord's form as Vishnu is decorated in all opulence. Therefore, Lord Shiva is trying to see that most opulent form of Narayan or Vishnu. Generally, the worship of the Lord begins with the worship of Narayan or Vishnu, whereas the worship of the Lord, of Lord Krishna and Radha, is most confidential, very difficult to understand the worship of Radha and Krishna. Lord Narayan is worshipable by the Pancharatriki Vidhi, or the regulative principles, whereas Lord Krishna is worshipable by the Bhagavata Vidhi. No one can worship the Lord in Bhagavad Vidhi. Bhagavad Vidhi means Raganuga Bhakti. Our Prabhupada will explain that later. That means spontaneous attraction. That is the way that Krishna is worshipped. But no one can worship the Lord in Bhagavata Vidhi or spontaneously without going through the regulations of the Pancharatriki Vidhi. Actually, neophyte devotees worship the Lord according to the Pancharatriki Vidhi or the regulative principles enjoined in the Narada Pancharatra. Radha Krishna cannot be approached by the neophyte devotees. Therefore, temple worship according to the regulative principles is offered to Lakshmi Narayan. Although there may be a Radha Krishna vigraha or form, the worship of the neophyte devotee is acceptable as Lakshmi Narayan worship. In other words, it has to be done according to rules and regulations, quite strictly. Because one doesn't have the spontaneity of love, unless one is extremely, extremely advanced, one doesn't have the spontaneous, pure love that will allow him to please the Lord by his worship. When one is connected to the Lord in spontaneous love, then everything he does is pleasing. But until that time, one shouldn't imitate spontaneity, but one should follow the scriptures and thereby make advancement. And that's called Vaidhimarg. The Pancharatriki Vidhi is called Vaidhimarg, which is according to the Vidhi, or the rules and regulations. And worship according to the Bhagavad Vidhi principles is called Ragamarg. Raga means attraction. The principles of Ragamarg are especially meant for devotees who are elevated to the Vrindavan platform. So that's very advanced. The inhabitants of Vrindavan, the gopis, Mother Yasoda, Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd boys, the cows, and everyone else, are actually on the Ragamarg or Bhagavata Marg platform. They participate in five basic rasas, dasya, sakya, vatsalya, madhurja, and santa. So this means that they love Krishna in one of five ways, and it is a complete natural, spontaneous outpouring of their consciousness, of their soul. It is the natural relationship that they have, that their soul, that they have, in as either a friend, as a parent, or a lover, or a servant. But although these five rasas are found in the Bhagavata Marg is especially meant for Vatsalya and Madhurja, parental relationship and conjugal, or paternal and conjugal relationship. Yet, there is the Vipralamba Sakya, Vishrambena Sakya, the higher fraternal worship of the Lord, especially enjoyed by the cowherd boys. Though there is friendship between Krishna and the cowherd boys, this friendship is different from the Aishwarya friendship between Krishna and Arjuna. So this is quite technical subject matter, that describing the different types of friendship. One is, oh God, you are like this, like Arjuna worshipped Krishna when Krishna showed him the universal form, the Vishwarupa. And the others, the Vishrambena Seva, is the very intimate, led by affection type of friendship that the cowherd boys have, where they just like friends. They don't just like if there's a if someone who has a friend whose parents are billionaires. So his friends, they just play, they're playing football with him, they push him around, they'll criticize him, they'll push him, they're playing, they call each other names, they have pet nicknames for them. Even though he's so powerful, and maybe this boy has so many servants, and his servants also have some kind of a friendship relationship with him, but it's with full awareness of his opulence and his power, and they have to be very careful when dealing with him. Although there is friendship between Krishna and the cowherd boys, this friendship is different from the Aishwarya, or the awareness of opulence, by Krishna and Arjuna. When Arjuna saw the Vishwarupa, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, he was afraid for having treated Krishna as an ordinary friend. Therefore, he begged Krishna's pardon. However, the coward boys who are friends of Krishna and Vrindavan, they sometimes ride on the shoulders of Krishna. They treat Krishna equally, just as they treat one another. And they are never afraid of him, nor do they ever beg his pardon. Thus, the Ragamarg or Bhagavatamarg friendship exists on a higher platform of Krishna, namely the platform of Vishambena friendship. Paternal friendship, paternal service, and conjugal service are visible in the Vrindavan Ragmarg relationships. Without serving Krishna, according to the Vidhimarg regulative principles of the Pancharatrika Vidhi, unscrupulous persons want to jump immediately to the Ragmarg principle. So here Prabhupada is criticizing those who are not advanced enough who really don't spontaneously love Krishna. They are not on that platform. They have material contaminations. They're not yet pure, but yet they want to imitate those who are very advanced. Such persons are called sahajiyas. There are also demons who enjoy depicting Krishna as pastimes with the gopis, taking advantage of Krishna by their licentious character. Those demons who print books and write lyrics on the Ragmarg principles are surely on the way to hell. Unfortunately, they lead others down with them. Devotees in Krishna consciousness should be very careful to avoid such demons. One should strictly follow the Vidhimarg regulative principles in the worship of Lakshmi Narayan, although the Lord is present in the temple of Radha and Krishna. Radha Krishna includes Lakshmi Narayan. Therefore, when one worships the Lord, according to the regulative principles, the Lord accepts the service in the role of Lakshmi Narayan. In the Nectar of Devotion, full instructions are given about the Vidhimarg worship of Radha and Krishna or Lakshmi Narayan. Although there are 64 kinds of offenses one can commit in Vidhimarg worship, in Ragamarg there is no consideration of such offenses because the devotees on that platform are very much elevated and there is no question of offense. Just like if you're walking across the street and you see someone and you just a big slap in the face. So you offend him so terribly, or you bump into someone really heavily. But if you're playing football with your friend and he bumps into you, or your little baby brother or sister comes and goes like that, there's no offense because the relationship is very intimate. So one who has an intimate, loving relationship with Krishna, his service is on the Ragmarg platform, and there's no question of any offense because the heart is right, the intimacy is there. And when one is not on that platform, one has to follow the rules and regulations. If we do not follow the regulative principles on the Vidhimarg platform and keep our eyes trained to spot offenses, we will not make progress. Prabhupada continues. In his description of Krishna's beauty, Lord Shiva uses the word charvayat chatur bahu sujata ruchinananam, indicating the beautiful forearm form of Narayan or Vishnu. Those who worship Lord Krishna describe him as sujata ruchi rananam. In the Vishnu Tattva, there are hundreds and thousands and millions of forms of the Supreme Lord. But of all these forms, the form of Krishna is the most beautiful. Thus, for those who worship Krishna, the word sujata ruchiranam is used. The forearms of Lord Vishnu have different purposes. The hands holding a lotus flower and conch shell are meant for the devotees, whereas the other two hands holding a disc and a mace or club are meant for the demons. Actually, all of the Lord's arms are auspicious, whether they are holding conch shell and flowers or clubs and discs. the demons killed by Lord Vishnu's chakra disc and club are elevated to the spiritual world, just like the devotees who are protected by the hands holding a lotus flower and kancha. However, the demons who are elevated to the spiritual world are situated in the impersonal Brahman effulgence, whereas the devotees are allowed to enter into the Vaikuntha planets. Those who are devotees of Lord Krishna are immediately elevated to the Goloka Vrindavan planet. The Lord's beauty is compared to rainfall, because when the rain falls in the rainy season, so one by one, Prabhupada is going through the qualities of Krishna that are mentioned in the verse. Here he's how it's said in the verse, the Lord's beauty resembles a dark cloud during the rainy season. The Lord's beauty is compared to rainfall, because when the rain falls in the rainy season, it becomes more and more pleasing to the people. After the scorching heat of the summer season, the people enjoy the rainy season very much. Indeed, they even come out of their doors in the villages and enjoy the rainfall directly. Thus, the Lord's bodily features are compared to the clouds in the rainy season. So when the clouds start forming in the rainy season, the people become very happy to see them. And when the rain comes down, people go outside just to cool off. The devotees enjoy the Lord's beauty because it is a collection of all kinds of beauty. So similarly, when the devotees see the beauty of the Lord's body, which resembles the clouds in the rainy season, everyone in this material world is scorched, overheated by the material miseries. And there is a relief in just seeing the Lord's beauty and bathing in that, and the rainfall coming from His cloud-like beauty, the effulgent rays coming from His cloud-like beauty, and they're very happy to see it, as the people are happy to see the clouds and after the hot season. So the Lord's beauty, the devotees enjoy the Lord's beauty because it is a collection of all kinds of beauties. Therefore, the word sarvasundarja sangraham is used. No one can say that the body of the Lord is wanting in beautiful parts. It is completely purnam. Everything is complete. God's creation, God's beauty, and God's bodily features. All these are so complete that all one's desires can become fully satisfied when one sees the beauty of the Lord. The word sarvasundarja indicates that there are different types of beauties in the material and spiritual worlds, and that the Lord contains all of them. Both materialists and spiritualists can enjoy the beauty of the Lord. Because the Supreme Lord attracts everyone, including demons and devotees, materialist and spiritualist, He is called Krishna. Krishna means literally the all-attractive. Similarly, His devotees also attract everyone. As mentioned in the Sad Goswami Stotra, Dira Dira Janapriyo, the Goswamis are equally dear to the Dira, devotees, and the Adira, the demons. Lord Krishna was not very pleasing to the demons when He was present in Vrindavan, but the six Goswamis were pleasing to the demons when they were present in Vrindavan. That is the beauty of the Lord's dealings with His devotees. Sometimes the Lord gives more credit to His devotees than He takes for Himself. For instance, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Lord Krishna fought simply by giving directions. Yet it was Arjuna who took the credit for fighting. Nimittamatram bhavasavyasarchin. Savyasarchi, Arjuna, can be but an instrument in the fight. Everything was arranged by the Lord, but the credit of victory was given to Arjuna. Similarly, in the Krishna consciousness movement, everything is happening according to the predictions of Lord Chaitanya, but the credit goes to Lord Chaitanya's sincere servants. Thus the Lord is described herein as Sarva Sundarja Sangraham. So that was Prabhupada's description of that, of Krishna's beauty. Text 47 and 48. The Lord is super excellently beautiful on account of His open and merciful smile and His sidelong glance upon His devotees. His black hair is curly, and his garments waving in the wind appear like flying saffron pollen from lotus flowers. His glittering earrings, shining helmet, bangles, garland, ankle bells, waist belt, and various other bodily ornaments combined with conch shell, disc, club, and lotus flower to increase the natural beauty of the Kastuba pearl upon his chest. The Lord has shoulders just like a lion's. Upon these shoulders are garlands, necklaces, and epaulets, and all of these are always glittering. Beside these, there is the beauty of the Kastuba money pearl, and on the dark chest of the Lord are the streaks named Srivats, which are signs of the goddess of fortune. The glittering of these streaks excels the beauty of the golden streaks on a gold testing stone. Has anyone ever seen a gold testing stone? Yeah? You have seen? No! Next time you go to Vrindavan, you should buy 20, 30 kilos of gold and then say, "Make." You want to see it tested. There's a stone that they have, yes? It's a black stone, very black. And if you take a metal or some fake gold and rub it against it, it will look, a color will come on the stone. Have you ever seen? A color will come on the stone in one way, but if real gold is rubbed against it, it will come out very bright goldy color. So that's how they use it. It's called a test stone. So if you have a black test stone and you take a piece of gold and rub it against it, a gold and a beautiful golden streak comes out on the black stone. So Krishna has a golden streak upon his chest, which represents Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune. And since his chest is blackish, like a rain-laden cloud, he has this mark on his chest, and it's compared in the verse to the glittering of these streaks upon his chest, the golden streaks upon his chest, which are the goddess of fortune. They excel the beauty of the golden streaks on a gold testing stone. Indeed, such beauty defeats a gold testing stone. So next time you go to Vrindavan, you know, you have a mission. Go into the jewelry stores and if you don't want to buy some kilos of gold, you can ask to see the gold test stone. The Lord's abdomen is beautiful due to three ripples in the flesh, three lines. Being so round, his abdomen resembles the leaf of a banyan tree. And when he exhales and inhales, the movements of the ripples appears very, very beautiful. The coils within the navel of the Lord are so deep that it appears that the entire universe sprouted out of it and yet again wishes to go back. The lower part of the Lord's waist is dark and covered with yellow garments, and a belt bedecked with golden embroidery work. His symmetrical lotus feet and the calves, thighs, and joints of his legs are extraordinarily beautiful. Indeed, the Lord's entire body appears to be well built. So, this really answers the question of whether the Lord has form or not, because he certainly, Lord Shiva wants to see this the Lord with form. Of course, the Lord also is formless, brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti sabyate, but the formless effulgence of the Lord is an emanation. It's an emanation from this very, very beautiful form. So in the world nowadays, when people want to, even the religious people or New Agey type of people or whatever, when they think in terms of the Supreme, they invariably think of the formless. Of course, you can't think of the formless, but they conceive of God as the all-pervading, the integrating principle, that which is one, or the especially the absence of any variegatedness, and we are one with that. So that is an aspect of Krishna that exists. That's his divine effulgence, his spiritual effulgence, Brahman, Brahma Jyoti, spiritual effulgence. But that effulgence is emanating from this form in the same way that the sun rays emanate from the sun planet. So it's very easy to understand the sun rays because it's easy to get close to them. But to understand the sun is so much more difficult. So similarly, to understand the form of the Lord is very, very difficult because it's fully spiritual, and we assume that something that's spiritual will not have form, because we'll think that if it has form, it is limited. Because if his complexion is blackish, that means it's not red and pink and blue and polka-dotted and striped. So therefore, it's exclusive of those things. And therefore, something that's exclusive can't be absolute. It doesn't include everything. So therefore, people will think, naturally, using material intelligence, that something unlimited, if it is here, it can't be everywhere. So therefore, it can't be anything specific. Otherwise, it will be limiting. And if it's limiting, it can't be absolute. But the fault in the logic is taking the material reasoning and superimposing that on spirit, but on spiritual. When by definition, spiritual is not, it doesn't follow the material laws. So the fact that Krishna has a golden streak upon his chest, it is not an ordinary material golden streak. Yes, he can have that. He can have a blackish complexion. He can be a certain height, and he can be extremely beautiful. But yet he can be everywhere and everything simultaneously, and yet aloof in that form. So how can we understand something that is so inconceivable and beyond us? It is not possible by using our material intelligence, because by using our material intelligence and our material perceptual abilities, all we can come up with is that spiritual doesn't have the material qualities. It's the absence of material things, so therefore it must be impersonal and formless and qualityness. So to understand the spiritual form of the Lord, one needs to hear from great authorities and practice bhakti. Then one can experience and actually eventually know it. Know this form for what it is. The deity form, for example, is representative of Krishna, but not representative in the sense of that that's not Krishna. But yet it's representative in the sense that it is made out of matter. But the form of Krishna, or Krishna empowers that, because it's not hard for Krishna to enter into matter, because matter is not separate from him. Because Krishna, bhumera ponalovayo kammaro buddha eva cha, that the material energy is also Krishna's energy. So he incarnates in the deity form, and he can manifest himself in the deity form, even though the deity form is made out of matter. He can manifest himself fully in that. If the devotee manifests love in his heart, Krishna will reciprocate, and he can fully manifest the spiritual potency through a form like this, made out of brass or whatever, astadatta. So Krishna is unlimited. He can do anything. He can, achintya shakti, he has inconceivable potency. So this, mostly the impersonalists, they all worship Lord Shiva, in India especially. But Lord Shiva is explaining what the Supreme is, and it's not impersonal. It has qualities, it has form, it has a name, and it's not an it at all. We'll read up to 52. My dear Lord, your two lotus feet, that means that the Lord has feet. God has feet. So someone could say, how is that possible? So what's our answer to that? Our answer is, again, what's our answer? Oh. Yeah, right. I mean, if he wants to have feet, who's going to say you can't have feet? Are you going to impose that upon him? No, I'm sorry, Krishna. You're not allowed to have feet. He does have feet. They are lotus feet because they are soft and pinkish, like a lotus flower. Very delicate. They are so beautiful, Lord Shiva says. Your two lotus feet are so beautiful that they appear like two blossoming petals of the lotus flower which grows during the autumn season. Indeed, the nails of your lotus feet, yes, his feet has nails. That is why our feet have nails. The nails of your lotus feet emanate such a great effulgence, but our feet, the nails do not emanate effulgence. Such great effulgence, spiritual sparkle, that they immediately dissipate the darkness in the heart of a conditioned soul. So therefore the devotees wish to think about and meditate upon and touch the lotus feet of the Lord. And that way the darkness in their hearts are removed. My dear Lord, kindly show me that form of yours which always dissipates all kinds of darkness in the heart of a devotee. My dear Lord, it attracts, and everyone has this experience. When you go to a temple and see the deities, either here or go to all the Australian temples, many wonderful deities. Radha Ballava in Melbourne, Radha Gopinath in Sydney, and what are the names of the Konatai deities in Brisbane? Anyone know? Huh? Konatai, yes. And just when, if one can just focus one's consciousness on the deity, whatever moroseness, unhappiness, problems, poof. There's a story, I probably even told it in this class already, how when the devotees were first opened up Bhaktivedanta Manor, some people from the village, this was in the 70s, the village council came in to assess it. They wanted to look around because they said it was a religious institution, so they went to look around. So they were going to walk in the temple room. So the man had his clipboard, and he had him take off his shoes, and he was writing down everything, and he walked in front of Radha Gokulananda, the Radha and Krishna deities there, and he looked at them, and he stayed there for a while, and then when he walked out, I asked him, well, what did you think? And his reply was, I never thought it was going to be like this. Because it's, and that all, there was this one time when I was in Vrindavan, this Muslim lady from Iran, who was a devotee, she came and saw me, and she said to me that because she was a Muslim, she had been brought up, taught that the Lord has no form. Also, Christians say the same thing. I think it's idolatry to worship the form of the Lord. Every religion practically. So she said she was revealing her heart, and she said that she had a hard time relating to the deity form. So I preached to her and explained philosophically this and that and this and that and this and that, and it didn't affect her at all. So I said, well, why don't you go, because Prabhupada had said if you have some problem that you can't deal with yourself, you should go to Lord Balaram and tell him your problem. So it was just time for the deities to open. So I told her to go down and tell her problem to Lord Balaram, that she couldn't believe in the deities. And then, this is true. And then about a half hour, 45 minutes or an hour later, she went down and she went and told Balaram that she couldn't believe in him because she was brought up as a Muslim, and it was very hard. And you know, one's conditioning like that. And she came back an hour later completely convinced. She was very simple-hearted. Indeed, the nails of your lotus feet emanate such a great effulgence that they immediately dissipate all the darkness in the heart of a conditioned soul. My dear Lord, kindly show me that form of yours which always dissipates all kinds of darkness in the heart of a devotee. My dear Lord, you are the supreme spiritual master of everyone. Therefore, all conditioned souls covered with the darkness of ignorance can be enlightened by you as the spiritual master. Those who desire to purify their existence must always engage in meditation upon your lotus feet. Do you desire to purify your existence? Well, Lord Shiva says, if you do, those who desire to purify their heart, they must always engage in meditation upon your lotus feet, as described above. In other words, always meditate upon Krishna and Krishna's service. Those who are serious about executing their occupational duties and who want freedom from fear, is there anyone who wants freedom from fear? They must take to this process of bhakti yoga. Yad bhakti yoga abhayadha svadhamam anutishtatam. We'll read the last part of that purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, there are descriptions of karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, dhyana yoga, etc. But unless one comes to the point of bhakti yoga, these other yogas cannot help one attain the highest perfection of life. In other words, bhakti yoga is the only means for liberation. We find this conclusion also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the discussion between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy regarding a human being's liberation from this material world. In that discussion, Ramananda Roy referred to the execution of vanashrama dharma, which means scripturally performing one's prescribed duties. And Lord Chaitanya indicated that vanashrama dharma was simply external, eho bhaya. Lord Chaitanya wanted to impress upon Ramananda Roy that simply by executing the duties of vanashrama dharma, one is not guaranteed liberation. Finally, Ramananda Roy referred to the process of bhakti yoga. Stanestita shutakatam tanovan manobir. Regardless of one's condition of life, if he practices bhakti yoga, which begins with hearing shutiganam gatam, hearing the transcendental messages of the Lord through the mouths of devotees, such a person gradually conquers the unconquerable God. God is known to be unconquerable. By definition, ajita. Who can defeat him? How is it possible to defeat God? By definition, God means the supreme. So therefore, he is unconquerable. He conquers everyone. He dominates. He's called the Lord, the supreme Lord. But although he is known to be unconquerable, one who submissively hears the words of a self-realized soul conquers the unconquerable. The conclusion is that if one is serious about liberation, he not only should execute the occupational duties of Vanashrama Dharma, but should also engage in bhakti yoga by beginning hearing from a realized soul. So we are doing that, we are hearing Prabhupada's words. This process will help the devotee conquer the unconquerable Supreme Personality of Godhead and become his associate after giving up this material body. Going back a little to the purport of text 52. The beauty of the lotus feet of the Lord is compared to the petals of a lotus flower which grows in the autumn season. By nature's law, in autumn, the dirty or muddy water of rivers and lakes becomes very clean. At that time, the lotus flowers growing in the lakes appear very bright and beautiful. The lotus flower itself is compared to the lotus feet of the Lord, and the petals are compared to the nails of the feet of the Lord. The nails of the feet of the Lord are very bright, as Brahma Samhita testifies, Ananda Chinmaya Sadujjala Vigrahasya. Every limb of the transcendental body of the Lord is made of Ananda Chinmaya Sadujjal. And every limb is eternally bright. Just like sometimes when you look at a religious painting, and usually there'll be a halo around a holy person, a saint or something like that. So where is that halo always? Around his head. So halo means effulgence, basically. But Krishna doesn't have a halo around his head. Only he has a halo around his head, but it's around every part of his body is effulgent, not only his head. As sunshine dissipates the darkness of this material world, the effulgence emanating from the body of the Lord immediately dries up the darkness in the heart of the conditioned soul. In other words, everyone serious about understanding the transcendental science and seeing the transcendental form of the Lord must first of all attempt to see the lotus feet of the Lord by studying the first and second cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. When one sees the lotus feet of the Lord, all kinds of doubts and fears within the heart are what? Vanquished. Okay, we'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Thank you very much. She doesn't have?
No, they have not shown in the picture.
Anyway, after we all leave, you can climb up and paint one effulgence. Yes. Also here. Only Krishna, Mother Yasoda. Maybe if, but also because everything in the spiritual world is made out of Ananda Chinmaya. So Mother Yasoda is sitting on a chair. So the chair would also be effulgent, and the air would be effulgent. And then if everything was effulgent, we wouldn't be able to see Krishna. So maybe that's why. Maybe, maybe not, but maybe.
When you see in the different religious paintings, even in the different religions, they always have the halo around the head.
Yeah.
There must be something substantial about that, because it's that way in all the different religions. Why is it the head that they have the halo? As opposed to the whole body or maybe like that.
You just said there was a good reason for it.
What?
I don't know, but you said there was a good reason for it. But I think it's probably a minor inaccuracy. I think when someone is holy, not only is his head holy, his feet are holy, his arms are holy, he's holy, holy. Yeah? It's true, isn't it?
It's just an artistic sort of
expression. Yeah, I think it's just that's the way they do it. But it's consistently like that, isn't it? Prabhupada had a nice effulgence too. Really. It was very glowing, but very soft and sweet glowing, very golden. If one lives in the mode of ignorance, you can see people when you're out in the streets, people who engage in sinful activities, you can see their effulgence is quite negative. Negative effulgence, if there's such a thing. Yeah? You can see, it's very, practically don't like to look. This is due to the mode of ignorance and sinful living. And if someone lives good, in a good way, then they'll have to attain a bodily luster just from the mode of ignorance. From goodness, what to speak if someone is truly deeply holy. Yep.
I saw this boy at Sydney just come back from the concert. I saw Srila Prabhupada, he was all golden. He said anyone came into contact with him became gold too. And I looked at him, he was gold. And he only looked gray at this point.
This was when? A while ago.
Remember going back a few verses in verse 46. It's about following the regulative principles in that very long purple.
Yes.
And it says that we have to train our eyes to spot out offenses, otherwise we're not making any progress.
Yeah.
Would that be referring specifically
to any type of offenses, or more like the offenses to the holy man? Yeah, he's talking about deity worship. So in Bhakti Samatha Sindhu Nectar Devotion, there's a description of 64 offenses while worshipping the deity. But also there's namaparad, seva aparad. And then there's namaparad, and Vaishnava Bharat and Jana Bharat. So we should not commit any aparats, including the Seva aparats or Nama aparats or Vaishnava Bharat or Jana Bharat, means offend ordinary people, because everyone is servant of everyone is a soul, so we shouldn't offend them thinking that you're not a deity. I can do what I want to you. I should be gentle. But this is specifically talking about Vaidhima, of worshipping the deity. Okay, let's stop here. I was supposed to go to Melbourne next Sunday, but fate may be requiring me that I leave this Sunday, so there's a good chance there won't be any classes, and the reason is because there's one very sincere, very good-hearted devotee named Govindadasi, previously Jaiprada, who may be leaving her body very, very soon, so I have some responsibility in that regard. So. Okay. That's going to happen to everyone. But it's just a transference of consciousness. to another situation according to what our consciousness wants, what's it saturated with. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Lord Shiva ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivedanta ki jai.